to listen to the Left Traffic Podcast.
What is up, Lap Traffic Nation? Welcome to episode number 98 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Brandon Crowd. Wow, what a weekend of racing. Two incredible races with the truck and Xfinity race. And, well, there was the Cup race, which was, well, ho-hum compared to what we saw on Friday and Saturday. Naturally, I was a little happy with the outcome of the racing Sunday, but obviously the racing on track left something to be desired. I will get to all of that here in a little bit. Huge, huge show today. Got a busy lineup. Before I get to all that, I thought I'd share a few stories from this past weekend. Was out of town. Did a little guys trip to Minneapolis. So first of all, want to give a quick shout out to a couple people out there that reached out to me because I put it out on Twitter that I was out in Minneapolis. Reached out, wanted to make sure everything was cool with the trip while I was out there. Chris at Chris Collier 64, NBTW at NASCAR BTW, and Matthew at NASCAR Thinkins. Thanks for reaching out, making sure I was well taken care of. Appreciate that very, very much. First off, I gotta say, I have got to give huge props to the city of Minneapolis. It is a beautiful downtown city with an incredible transit system. I wish Metro Detroit had half of what Minneapolis has from a transit system. Clean, efficiently ran. It's great. You're able to get on a transit for $2.50 and get a ride from the airport to the downtown area by all the hotels. It's fantastic. Friday night, we got there, checked in, went down to First Avenue, which is where Purple Rain was filmed, walked around, checked that out, got some drinks and dinner, and then the magic happened. I think anyone that's familiar with downtown Minneapolis, I'm sure the guys that reached out to me are very familiar with this, or have been to downtown Minneapolis, have heard of or been to a place called Sneaky Pete's. And this being some of our second and third trips there for some of us, we were like, hell yeah. Got to go back to Sneaky Pete's. And all I'm going to say is the people watching at Sneaky Pete's is incredible. You will see some of the most glitz and glamored people to the not so glitz and glamored people. I could not do any verbal description justice. So all I will say is if you are ever in downtown Minneapolis, you must go check out Sneaky Pete's. Saturday, we went and toured Paisley Park, Prince's Museum, at his house. All four of us are Prince fans. This was our second trip to go see Paisley Park. It's incredible. Highly recommended. After the Prince tour, we found a bar that had a University of Michigan's alum group that goes there each week, sets up maize and blue balloons and the whole nine yards. Literally felt like I walked into a bar in Metro Detroit for the second half of the Michigan game, which was awesome. Definitely felt like everyone there had some maize and blue, which was really cool. And then Sunday, we went to that abysmal Lions game where Matt Stafford was sacked 10 times. Could not believe how bad they played. And wrapped out the trip. Got home Monday afternoon. Caught up with the wife. Went to the DVR. Caught up on the races so I could do this show. So that was this past weekend. It's busy, and the house has exploded into Christmas wonderland here. Yes, the Crowd household loves Christmas and likes to celebrate and get decorating as early as possible. Lindsay does an incredible job, and it takes her a very long time. So we're of the mindset of, hey, might as well enjoy it for all the hard work that goes into decorating for that. So that said, hope you guys had a great weekend as well. Man, it's episode 98. The countdown to 100 is on. One more show to go. And that, of course, will be a best of show because, unfortunately, I'm out of town again Sunday to Wednesday. And that will definitely be too hard to do a turnaround Wednesday for episode 99 and then the bonus show on Thursday. So I will preload a show to load on Tuesday. I'll do a little mashup there. Haven't decided what yet. And do a few minutes of new stuff on there as well. And that will be posted Tuesday. And then Thursday, November 15th, 9 days away, episode 100. Got a huge lineup. Going to continue with the giveaways. Got some shirts to give away later tonight. And then we'll do a couple couple of giveaways next Thursday, I think. Why not, right? And then the listener call-in show, November 27th. If you want to be a part of that, go to the website, laptrafficpodcast.com, and fill out the contact page, and I'll get you lined up on the show. And man, there's just so much going on. And also, be on the lookout, maybe even by the end of this week, for the listener award show on the website, where you can go vote for some of your favorites from this past season. All right. Wow, it's a 5.5 minute intro there. All right. Well, what do we got lined up today? Lots going on. From Yahoo Sports, Jay Busby is going to be on. We're going to talk what he's got going on, get his take on the season. And he's going to stick around, talk some cup racing from this past weekend at Texas. Then, last minute ad, late this afternoon, Cole Custer is going to be on and talk about his Xfinity win from Texas. And then I'll close it out with a little truck talk. So going backwards today, but that's all right. After that, social media, silly season. Aaron will be on. Let us know what we can expect weather-wise. ISM this weekend, lucky dog, lap down picks, fantasy. Let's get rolling. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, joining me on the line, a Yahoo Sports writer since 2008. He's covered all the big events, the Super Bowl, check. Masters, check. Indy 500, check. And yes, even the Daytona 500. He is the author of Earnhardt Nation, a Lap Traffic Nation, making his Lap Traffic debut. Mr. Jay Busby, what's up, sir?
I'm doing well, brother. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Thanks so much for coming on the show. How was your weekend?
Good, good. Usual mix of college and pro and NASCAR. You know, it's a good time to be a sports fan. Good time of year.
Absolutely. All right. So before we get rolling, funny story to share. When I reached out to Jay to come on the show, I mentioned that we had a mutual friend, Yahoo writer Mr. Dan Wetzel. I'm sure some of you guys have heard his name. And Jay, you mentioned that because I knew Dan, that put a stain on my reputation. So I'm just curious if there's anything I can do to clear my name and knowing Dan Wetzel.
Yeah, Dan is a horrible human being, and really nobody should. No, Dan is a truly, truly great guy. And I mean, I assume that everybody's already following him, but if not, I mean, please do. He and I have been very fortunate to raise beers everywhere from Daytona to Augusta to South Korea. So it's we've been friends for about 10 years now, and he's just absolutely the best in the business. And really the cool thing about Dan and about there's very few people that are like this in that. They'll dip into NASCAR and they have a respect for NASCAR, even though they're not necessarily NASCAR writers. A lot of sports writers I find kind of view NASCAR with disdain or with dismissal, and that's garbage. I mean, we all know that. So sure. Dan is one of those guys who really respects the sport and has a good time writing about it.
Absolutely, yeah. So how I got to know Dan, my buddy owns a sports bar here in Berkeley, Michigan, and over the years, becoming better and better friends with him and meeting Dan a few times and having drinks with him at the bar and going to some opening day events with Dan and opening Lions game this past season. So Dan and I have gotten to know each other over the years, which is really
good.
Cool.
Good deal.
So, and you also know another buddy of mine by the name of Mr. Andrew Sherwin with the PETM podcast down in Atlanta.
Yes, he and I end up, speaking of bars, we seem to be running in some familiar themes here. Yes. He and I have share a bar. There's a bar not far from either of our places that we end up at now and then. So yeah, he's a great guy. He's got a great podcast and yes. A lot of fun on Twitter. Very fun follow on Twitter. And again, you know, just this is what is in what I love about NASCAR. What is frustrating about NASCAR is that the personalities, like all of you guys, that are just don't get the kind of. It doesn't get the kind of mainstream notice that it used to. I mean, you know, maybe we talk about this a little bit. It's frustrating that NASCAR, you know, regardless of how much you love it, you can't argue that it has faded from its heights of popularity.
Absolutely. And that's a shame. Yeah, no, I'm with you there 100%. But like you said, though, it's great that NASCAR gives us the platform, but it's a bummer that it's not getting out there to the level that it once was from a popularity standpoint there.
Yeah.
Jay, tell everyone a little bit about yourself, how you got into sports journalism, how you got over to Yahoo, your NASCAR fandom, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I got into sports journalism the way that everybody gets into sports journalism, by writing about landfills. I was an English major in school, I went to grad school, and I got a job writing writing about landfills and solid waste and recycling for an industry newsletter, which is every bit as exciting as it sounds. And, you know, the old anybody who's in any kind of creative endeavor, you know how it is. You got a daytime job to pay the bills and then you write at night. And so I had a site focused on Southern sports, and obviously NASCAR falls into that. And I managed to talk my way into Yahoo when they were looking to expand their NASCAR coverage a bit. And that was 10 years ago or so. And here we are.
Very cool. Very cool. So from a NASCAR fan perspective, did you grow up a fan as a kid? You get to go to many races back in the day or anything like that? Or
I was more of a stick and ball fan as a kid, but I was always moved back and forth between Atlanta and Richmond. I had family in Richmond, and so I'd go up there a lot, go to the old Southside Speedway up there. And I remember they had this deal, which I would love to see. Eddie Gossage at Texas has got to bring this back, where they would get fans to bring their own cars to the track there at Southside Speedway and would run, you know, race each other around the track. And there was this guy. And I still remember his name, and I need to track him down. His name was Jimmy Gearbox Moore.
Nice.
And this dude, I think he was racing like a station wagon or something, but he had souped this thing up that he would win every heat and every race that he ran. And so, I would just get mesmerized by this guy. So, you know, as time wore on, I was always an Earnhardt fan and a Stewart fan, but it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I started getting into the personalities aspect of NASCAR. And that, of course, is what draws us all in and what keeps us here.
Absolutely. Tell everyone a little bit about the book that you wrote about the Earnhardts.
Yeah. I was looking around for a book topic, and I realized that there had never been a full wire-to-wire biography of the whole Earnhardt family, starting with Ralph and all the way through Dale Sr. and then right on to what was then the present day with Dale Jr. up to 2016. And it was just fascinating stuff. I went back to research in the archives to find out Ralph's origins. I found out some great stories that had never been told about Dale Sr. and then Dale Jr. Obviously, I'd covered him a fair amount and talked to a lot of people for that as well. And it went right up until the time that, where my book cuts off is basically almost where his book starts with the idea of concussions that would eventually force him to retire from racing. So it was a lot of fun to write. You know, there's nobody quite like Dale Earnhardt Sr. And the rest of his family is just as interesting.
Absolutely. Very cool. I will check that out. I honestly didn't know that you had written that until I did my homework to put the bio together here for you a little bit. So I am interested to go and check that out for sure.
Good.
Before we get into NASCAR in this season, like I mentioned, you've covered it all with some big moments in sports. Anything stick out to you? I know you've seen a lot, but what's that one memorable Super Bowl moment, Derby moment? What sticks out? You got any cool stories that stick out to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got a million, but we're just sticking with NASCAR. I was there, as I'm sure many people listening were, in 2014 when Dale Jr. won the Daytona 500. I mean, I was right there when he managed to hold off the field. He had Denny Hamlin and Brad Keselowski right behind him, and he goes and wins that race. And it was just such a huge redemption for him. The guy had been at the absolute bottom of the barrel. He knew it. Everybody knew that he was just at Hendrick Motorsports, and he said this. He was at Hendrick Motorsports back in those dark days of 2009 and 2010. He was there because of his name.
Sure.
and nothing else. You know, he was pushing merchandise, and he knew that. And so and that's what he always hated was being recognized only for his name. So for him to fight his way back from that, to go and work his way back up, it was magnificent to see. And that was a tremendous amount of fun. That's of all the events that I've been at, that one ranks way, way up there.
That's awesome. Very cool. All right. So I got to ask, college football playoff rankings are going to be released here very, very soon. So I want your take. Was Michigan's dominant win over Penn State and the fact LSU got shut out to Bama, is that enough to move Michigan into the top four?
Oh, it should. I mean, you know, the only reason why it wouldn't is if somebody would think that Georgia's performance over Kentucky was enough. But I don't think so. I think Michigan is right there. I think that, you know, we've had these same few teams, Alabama and Clemson and now Georgia. You know, Ohio State doesn't look like they're going to be there this year. But, you know, you've had these same few teams, so it would be good to get Michigan in there. I love Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh is one of the – I love characters. And, you know, it's obviously NASCAR's got a million of
Absolutely.
Those.
Absolutely.
And Harbaugh is another one of those mold where he's just, you would not want to spend any length of time with that guy. You would not want him in any kind of supervisory role. You would not want to date his daughter. You would not want to be playing with his son. But he, God damn, is he fun to watch on the sidelines. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see Michigan now break into that top four.
I love that. Yeah, there's a lot of chatter that he's found his home because nobody else would take him.
Which is kind of sad because, I mean, I thought he was doing really well in San Francisco, and he just, you know, he's one of those guys that just absolutely, when it gets too calm, he gets nervous. And so he's got to call some chaos, and that's what got him run out of San Francisco, I think. But, you know, their loss is Michigan's game.
I love it. Absolutely. So one more Michigan question for you. How do you think if Michigan wins out and is able to get the win over OSU and assuming Notre Dame wins out, could the fact that Michigan's got one loss to Notre Dame impact anything, do you think?
I think it's certainly an issue, but I think the bigger question is what happens in the SEC championship. If Georgia happens to if Georgia beats Alabama, that throws things into a mess. And then at that point, either Michigan or Notre Dame probably gets bounced. But if Georgia loses, as frankly will probably happen, you'd be looking at that straight run there with Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Notre Dame, and you know that would draw a few eyeballs, I would say.
Absolutely. I would love if it plays out that way to where Michigan and Notre Dame are in there. I would love for it to be 2-3 because I would love to get a rematch. That would be incredible. That would be a lot of fun, but.
Nobody wants to be number four, so that's true. All want to avoid getting fed to Alabama. So
absolutely. All right, let's transition, talk a little NASCAR here. So NASCAR messed up pretty bad this weekend as it pertained to the 48 car. NASCAR sent him to the rear of the field on the start of the race for failing pre-race tech three times, but in reality, he only failed it twice. He should have been able to keep his starting spot at 23rd, an error that's pretty hard to correct once the race starts. What's your take on that? You know, NASCAR, their rules, their tech inspection process, all this stuff isn't helping bring fans back.
No. I mean, short answer, no, it's not. I mean, there's so many issues here, and just to dispense with one of them, my main question is, why the hell is Jimmy Johnson still racing? I mean, what more does – obviously he wants to get that eighth championship, but man, that guy has got the life that most of us would dream of. And I kind of feel like NASCAR is about fifth or sixth on his list of priorities, you know, behind skiing and mountain biking and spending time with his beautiful family and traveling the world. But that notwithstanding, he got jobbed, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. He got completely shafted. And you can kind of see how this would happen when you've got a bureaucracy going on where everybody thinks that the other person handled it, but it was a shame. And it's, you know, it's fortunate that it didn't have any playoff implications
absolutely.
For NASCAR. But yeah, I mean, this is the problem when you try to regulate and then overregulate and then regulate the regulations and then re-regulate the regulations. It's I know that it's tremendously difficult to just say get out there and race because at that point then you get the big three and they'll be leading by five laps. But it's tough to see how the constant emphasis on regulations and tweaking and engineering specs and all of this trying to fit everything into a tight box. It's tough to see how that makes the sport more appealing to fans.
Sure, you know, at some point, you know, not to say you've got to dumb it down so that, you know, because the fans are stupid, but you got to dumb it down just to, you know, make it enjoyable to some level.
Yeah, I mean, there's when you start getting into the aspects affecting the level of competition, then that's when fans start to tune out. They're not really interested in how many times a car had to go through tech, and if it affects their car, if it affects their driver, you know, they're going to be that much less interested. I think that what NASCAR has to do to get itself back on its feet, it's a question that we could talk about from now until Christmas and still not be any closer to solving it. But you know, I think that there's got to be a way to give engineers and crew chiefs a little bit more latitude without opening the door necessarily to one rogue guy going and creating some car that goes that laps the field five times.
No, I'm with you there. All right. Another, you know, transition in terms of whether we're talking about competition on the track that's hurting things. Fanatics announced that it's ending its trackside agreement with NASCAR early, something that was supposed to go through 2024. Fanatics is pulling the plug 6 years early. There's talk of Monster not renewing as a title sponsor. But then we look at Jimmy Johnson, who just got a new full-time two-year sponsor. We've got a new title sponsor in the truck series. What's looking too far into sponsor issues, whether it's from a driver or series perspective there?
I don't think you can look too far into sponsor. I think that every level of scrutiny of sponsors' issues is warranted. I think that you have to take a close look at sponsors because, I mean, we can't know this. We're not permitted to know this. But I would love to find out what the difference is between what Lowe's paid for Jimmy Johnson back in the 2008-2009 season and what Ally's paying for the 2019 and 2020 seasons. I'm no accountant, but I would imagine that there is a zero or two differential there. And while we all kind of bemoan the fact that NASCAR switches sponsors so much, the simple truth is that they have to have these sponsors. This is the lifeblood, and it's tough to figure how the sport can remain competitive at the level of spending it is without getting these high level sponsors. It's gotten to the point where it's the whole snake eating its tail thing. It's so expensive that it requires heavy duty sponsorship. But heavy-duty sponsors don't want to buy in because it's so expensive.
Absolutely. Well, and you look, it wasn't a manufacturer, it wasn't a retailer, it was a financial institution that's got money. I wonder if that's playing a role in terms of them coming into the sport. Granted, it's not their first time into it. Ally, GMAC was in the sport, years back with Brian Vickers, but the types of sponsors that are coming into the sport are a lot different than it were back in the day. Again, I don't know if that means anything or what, but it's definitely interesting. And you also look at the fact that it's not lucrative for an owner for a new owner to come into the sport and say, hey, I've got capital and I want to invest it in the sport of NASCAR by opening a race team. It's writing a lot of blank checks that, odds are you're not going to come out ahead at the end of it. And that's, I think, somewhere where NASCAR should put a lot of resources to is figuring out how can we make this lucrative for owners to come out ahead when it's all said and done, when you're finishing first or you're finishing 40th.
They had the, I'm with you right down the line. They had the president or whoever he was, the CEO of Ally, on to announce the Jimmy Johnson sponsorship last week. And it was funny. They had him on the pre-race show, and I'm sure people saw that. And Jimmy and Rick Hendrick are sitting there next to him, and they're looking over him. And all I can think of is they're looking at him the way you remember the old cartoons when a wolf would be looking at a rabbit, and the rabbit would suddenly transform into a big old steak, just steaming right there on the plate. They're looking at him like, yeah, open that checkbook up, fella. There you go. So, yeah, I mean, it's and well, they should. If they can find somebody that's willing to spend, more power to them. But I happen to have the Texas race results up here, and this is not to make fun of this, but sure. You get your money where you can. But some of the sponsors included, if you could name the drivers that they were sponsors for, I'll buy you a beer. Sustainable Quarry Crypto Mining. Procore, Earthwater, what else have we got here? Brookshires, Jacob Companies. These were sponsors this week. These were title sponsors on cars. And, it's, again, they're all notable companies, or they're all good companies. They're thank heaven they're sponsoring NASCAR, but this isn't Coca-Cola and Tide anymore.
Absolutely. I'm with you there. I'm with you. All right. So just a general question. What is maybe your one takeaway from 2018, and what are you looking forward to in 2019?
My one takeaway is really frustration. And the frustration is this. We have three of the best drivers in NASCAR history running right now. And I'm not overstating it by saying that.
No.
Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr. Maybe Truex might not be there. Maybe he needs a few more years to prove himself. But Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch, without a doubt, two of the best drivers in NASCAR history. They might even be top 10 by the time that their careers are done. And yet, we still can't figure a way, and by we, I mean all of us, NASCAR sponsors, media, fans, we still can't figure a way to get excited about these three guys. This trio is just like the old Earnhardt, Darrell Wallace, Bill Elliott. I was about to say, Chase Elliott. It's just like that trio from back when, and you know, it's the same kind of three different personalities, and yet we haven't been able to crack through and get these three really great drivers and really great personalities to break out of the ever shrinking NASCAR mold. And it's tremendously frustrating as a fan of the sport. I mean, as a media member, I have to watch it dispassionately, but you know, as a fan, it's frustrating that these guys can't get the traction that even the one generation before did.
Well, I am with you there 100%. Yet once the big three started winning, for me, this season was a lot different. You've had breakout career years by veterans in the sport. You've had, for the first time in years, guys like Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, 7-8 wins. You know, it's not Jimmy Johnson going out there winning 7 or 8 and one or two sprinkled throughout the rest of the field. Like, this was a different year. And yes, there was domination. And yes, you know, you can look at the cookie cutter mile and a half tracks that these guys went out there and dominated. But the mere fact that you had competition amongst three guys is something we haven't seen before. It was like, all right, you go to California, you know Jimmy Johnson's going to win. You go to Martinsville, you know Jimmy Johnson or Denny Hamlin's going to win. You go to Phoenix, you know Kevin Harvick's going to win. We didn't see that. We've got Jimmy Johnson winless, Denny Hamlin winless, and you've got, like you said, three guys going out there having this tremendous season, and you know, all we see on social media is people bitching about it. Like, this is what we claim we wanted, and we're getting it, and people still aren't happy.
Yes, no, I agree. And I have to make one correction. I said Darrell Wallace. I meant Darrell Waltrip.
Yes.
As good of a driver as Bubba Wallace is going to be, he was not racing against
That's right. Yes.
Dale Earnhardt and Bill Elliott. That is fake news. I will say that straight here. Yeah, I mean, what do we do? We can use him as a segue. You know, it's kind of craven to say, look, we've got an African-American driver. You know, now NASCAR's integrated. But, you know, it's in a way – that's almost what NASCAR has to do to break through. I mean, I cover a lot of golf, and things really changed for the sport of golf to a large extent when Tiger Woods stepped up
Sure.
and kind of broke that hegemony of white dudes in beige pants. And so I don't know what the answer is for NASCAR. There is no one answer for NASCAR, but the fact that you've got right now people that are every bit as talented as as some of the drivers of the past. I mean, Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch, I would put those guys in the 1979 Daytona 500 and they would be right there.
Sure.
And I have absolutely no doubt about that. But the fact that we're not able to flip that into something new, that says something more about the way that the sport is rather than necessarily the way that these individual drivers are.
Absolutely. No, I'm with you there. I'm with you. All right. Let's transition. Let's talk about the Cup race from this past weekend at Texas. Saw domination finally by one of the top three in Kevin Harvick winning both stages and the win. I'll be honest. I think part of what's maybe hurt the playoffs is, you know, the big three have been kind of quiet in the playoffs. You know, Kyle Busch had the win early on. And just now with Kevin Harvick, you know, and the playoff format, I think, is taking a lot of heat right now because these guys are still in it based on what they did in the regular season. I don't know if that's good or bad. You know, should the regular season, if you dominate, be enough to carry you through to the end, or should it just be enough to get you to the playoffs and you got to perform there? I go back and forth on that, to be honest with you.
I think it's and that's a, you know, it's good to go back and forth. I think it's good. I think what that does is address the complaints of a lot of people who said that the regular season doesn't matter, and the way that they used to like it was back in the pre-chase days where you ran every race, and of course you would have championships and two and three races early.
Sure.
You know, it's under that format, which is why they changed it. No one wants to have an anticlimactic race, but by the same token, what happened in February has an impact on what happens in November. And so from that standpoint, I think it's a real good idea. And what one of the cool aspects of the last couple of years of NASCAR is watching the strategic moves, and particularly Truex and his crew, they figured this out more than anybody, that you pile up those stage points every time, every race, and it pays off down the line. They were the first ones to really figure that out. And so I was impressed to see that. And of course, obviously, they've been followed now by Busch and Harvick. But I have no problem with that. I have no problem with the idea of what you've done all season long carrying you deep into the playoffs. It's not exactly analogous to stick and ball playoffs, but then again, it shouldn't be. You know, I think that there's something to be said for a year-long investment that you know, that allows you to continue forward based on what you've done all year. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a cruel system, and I think that this weekend at Phoenix is going to be there's going to be some cruel endings for some folks.
Absolutely. Well, and just to kind of piggyback off what you said about trying to make an analogy to stick and ball, I guess the only loose and very loose comparison would be is what you do in NASCAR in the regular season is kind of like getting the home field advantage in the stick and ball sports.
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, first round bye or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So the race Sunday. What'd you think?
You know, it was not one of the great races of the season. You know, Harvick was dominant, and I think that that's what you saw all the way through, was that he was in control and he was not going to relinquish it. You know, I was hoping for a little better performance out of some of his top level competitors, but you know, for the most part, it's interesting how. And I'm not sure that we have ever really figured this out. It's interesting how the farther that you go in the playoffs, it seems that the drivers that have the most to lose, or the most to, I should say, the most to gain, the least to lose, seem to be the ones that gravitate up toward the top. I mean, I'm looking at the standings right now, and the top nine finishers, all but three are looking to advance onward to the playoffs that are still alive in the, you know, the group of eight. So they tend to group their way up there, but Harvick was just in a separate class this weekend, and he goes into next week, and he goes into Homestead with plenty of momentum, and that should be of a great concern to Joey Logano and whoever else ends up with him.
I'm with you. Let's talk about Clint Bowyer for a minute. Gets into it with Hamlin early on the first lap. Pit road penalty. Finished 26 in a must-win situation going into ISM. When I look at Bowyer, I get his frustration, obviously, at the end of the race, very short with his post-race interview there, walking back to his hauler. But a vast turnaround from where Bowyer was last year, able to pick up two wins this year, is part of a four-car dominance with Stuart Haas Racing. Do you think Bowyer will have a shot going into Phoenix?
Well, you know, he could, but I think that it's the odds are long, long against him. I will just say that I love Clint Bowyer. I mean, the guy is just – he's the guy that I always kind of think of as the great – I don't want to say missed opportunity because it's not been completely missed, but this is a guy who really, really ought to be out front for NASCAR. They ought to be doing all they can to promote this guy, and the fact that he's starting to win races is so much the better. I mean, he's funny. He's got that down-home accent. He's a good-looking dude. He's a country boy. He's got every kind of kind of the image that NASCAR envisions of itself as kind of a, you know, a good old boy that can fix his own car and then drive that car incredibly fast. Clint Bowyer embodies that. So to see him winning, you know, to see him back up front, it's great. And I would love to see more of that. I'm just not sure it's going to happen this weekend.
I'm with you. All right. So let's talk about the end of the race there. Last 30 laps or so, we saw Harvick, you know, doing what he does, and Blaney out there trying to give him some fit, basically. We saw Harvick and Blaney rotating, starting outside on the inside. Give me your take on the end of the race there.
Yeah, that's why the strategy of NASCAR is so important. This is what you know, if you want to, it's a dicey thing trying to get a non-fan of NASCAR to watch the end of a race, because you never know what's going to happen. But in this case, you could say this was a chess match one. It didn't end in one driver driving through chaos and winning. It ended with a driver getting an astonishing restart and putting away the rest of the field. But to set that up, you've got to work back 30 laps, as you say, to watch how Harvick chose the right lanes, to chose the right sides to start on. And so it was a masterclass in how to think through a race. And it's kind of like a pitcher's duel, you know, a 1-0 pitcher's duel. It might not be the most exciting game, but if you know what you're looking for, it's really fascinating to watch.
Oh, absolutely. That's, you know, that's where, and I get the cliche, it's just guys turning left. But, you know, I was on a guy's trip this weekend out to Minneapolis, and I was given a lot of flack for being a NASCAR fan, as I expect. And that's all cool. And I flat out told him, I said, guys, you live a half mile away from me. I said, you come over any Sunday you want, sit in a basement with me, watch a NASCAR race, and I will show you how it's so much more than just guys going left. And I guarantee you, you will walk out of there and you will turn on the race the following weekend. You may not watch it all, but you will turn on the race the following weekend. So
not only that, how far are you from Michigan? How far are you away from the Speedway?
I'm about 90 minutes.
Okay, so that's still doable. I mean, that's the kind of thing where, and you know, I firmly endorse dragging anyone who's listening to this. I firmly endorse dragging your non-NASCAR friends into your basement or whatever. You know, duct tape them and tie them up if you have to. Whatever you got to do, sit them down, throw some beer and some wings at them and say, look, let's just watch this damn race. And especially Homestead. Homestead is going to be a great race.
Yes. Yep.
There's, you know, I have no doubt about that whatsoever. But even, you know, that's great, but taking someone to an actual track is even better.
Oh, yeah.
Giving them the whole experience and showing them all of the sights and the sounds and the smells, and not just what's going on the track, but it's an event, man. And I am just like you, man. I'm an evangelist for NASCAR, and even though I don't cover it as much as I used to, I'm in tune with it every week. And anytime that anybody talks crap about it on Twitter, I'm right there to say, hey, you know, you have no idea what you're talking about. This is an amazing sport. So yeah, it was not one of those flash and dazzle wins. It was just a perfectly executed chess match.
Absolutely. All right. And then post-race, Kevin Harvick steals the hearts of everyone that tuned in, taking that little kid out of the stands, getting a selfie in front of the car. I mean, that is what embodies NASCAR. I mean, that's what I love about this sport. I mean, like, you know, we were talking before we started here, you know, MIS, you know, gives me an incredible opportunity to get media credentials at both MIS races. I record a show from there on race weekend. And that's something the stick and ball sports, I don't think I'd have that opportunity. They wouldn't recognize, you know, a podcast like this in terms of being credible or helpful. And MIS does. And I know, like, Atlanta does with the PETM podcast. And that's, you take that, you know, you take what Kevin Harvick did at the end of the race there. That's what I love about this sport. That's why I am hooked on this sport. And I just think it's incredible.
Yeah, there is no sport where you get as close to the participants as you do in NASCAR with the ability to kind of see them in action. I mean, yes, you're right next to golfers when they hit, but they're in the middle of business. You can get right up by NASCAR drivers if you're positioned in the right place. You can catch them right there when they're walking to and from their haulers. It's really an exceptionally fan friendly sport from that standpoint. And the bit with Harvick and the selfie, I thought that was wonderful. And I like the line. He was he wanted to take the kid to victory lane with him, but he realized his parents might not be able to
to
follow
find
after him. So yeah, you don't want to throw a kidnapping charge
right,
on top
right.
of a race win. So you know, that was a wise move to send him back to his parents. Yeah. But yeah,
you know,
I mean,
I also picked up on his he also commented in his post race stating, you know, it. You sometimes got to step back and realize what you mean to people, you know, and he is a figurehead. They all are. They are all figureheads. And it's not just NASCAR. It's stick and ball sports. It's celebrities in Hollywood. And, you know, sometimes people are going through tough times or hard times, you know, and not to go all Dustin Rhodes there, hard times. But, you know, you do mean a lot to people. You know, sometimes that 4 hours on Sunday is a release before having to go back to work on Monday for a job you hate kind of thing. And, you know, I thought that comment that he said really struck a chord for me and was pretty awesome.
You know, I think that every fan who's been to a race and has had enough time being at races always has a story like that. I mean, you know, my son has come with me to a lot of he doesn't come when I'm covering a race because, you know, he'd
sure.
be on foot and I don't want him around. But he loves the idea of coming to the races. And so if I'm covering a practice or if I'm covering a track day, I'll bring him along. And he was one time he's standing by the fence and, you know, he calls out to this one driver and the driver just comes over and gives him a little fist bump and says, how you doing? little man, and then and just goes on his way. This driver was a guy who was not very well known at the time. Well, this driver was Brad Keselowski, and so my son has been a Keselowski fan since, just from that one little moment that Kez did, and so that's the it has such a tremendous impact.
Absolutely.
And so it's great to see that, and you know, you hope that it's asking a lot to drivers to do that every time, but man, just a little bit of effort goes so far.
Absolutely. All right, let's move over to the standings and where we're setting up here with the cutoff race coming up here at Phoenix. Harvick, Logano locked into Homestead. Right now, the other two that make up the final four are the big three, with Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. currently the ones that would wrap up the final four. If Logano or Harvick or someone not in the playoffs get the win, I got a feeling that's how the final four will look. But there are four guys on the outside looking in that are going to go out there and try to give it their all. Kurt Busch, pretty big points deficit, 25 points back, and it only gets worse from there. You got a prediction for ISM? Is it going to be typical? Is it going to be Kevin Harvick's playground, or what are we going to see there?
Yeah, I think we're going to see Harvick just roll. I mean, everything is so far pointing to him just setting up really, really well. And then we will have, as you say, the big three plus Logano, which really is how it ought to be. You know, I mean, maybe you could switch in Keselowski for Logano there, because Keselowski had that little run in the middle of the season, that three races in a row. But yep, this is what you want. You want the best at the end. I'm not going to name any names, but there have been times when a driver got in and into the final four, and you're kind of like, what's he doing there? There could be somebody else that we would like it better in this spot. But you know, to have these guys, and certainly
Ryan Newman, 2014.
I wasn't going to say it, brother, but there you, that's exactly what I was thinking of. A funny story. Newman, after that race, you know, what I always do after the when I was covering the Homestead race is I would go and, you know, you go and you cover the scene, and then you go look for anything else that's going on. And that was the year that Logano had a chance and he didn't quite win it. And he goes storming off, and I look around in the garage area there, and there's Newman with his fire suit half unzipped. He's got a T-shirt on. He's drinking beer. He's hanging out with fans. He's posing for pictures with anybody that came by. He knew that he was playing with house money.
Right.
And then he was just like, it didn't work out, but so what? So, you know, I love Newman, but yeah, there were better people that could have filled that spot in that particular year, better drivers for that particular year.
Well, it's funny, you know, I kid with you on that, but on the same token, it goes to show that consistency can also pay off in this format.
Fair. You know, that's the point. Yeah, that's how he got there.
That was the first year of this format. It worked out for him then, because, you know, they didn't really, I think the whole field didn't really have a grasp on how to manipulate the system yet. I think that's changed. You know, obviously, you're not going to have a winless driver in the final four this year, but he played the consistency, and it paid off for him at that year. So, I mean, kudos to him for being able to do that at that point.
Yeah,
in time.
Yeah. That's a tricky thing too, because, you know, you have the points, the playoffs format has switched so many times that people can get frustrated. But still,
sure,
you know, I honestly think that the way they've got it now is the best possible way to do it. I don't think that we want to go back to a full season long race, because you know, every time that we've done this, and obviously drivers would race differently, but we've done it a few times where we've simulated what a season would be like, and yeah, a lot of times Jimmy Johnson has it locked up you know, well before Halloween, and that's not what anybody wants.
No, I'm with you, and like you said a few minutes ago, you know, I want the big three there. I've been an advocate for the big three to make it to Homestead since they started their tear, because otherwise it would feel anticlimactic. Like, you want the best three going out there. I mean, to that's the way it should be for the fans, you know, and I hope it works out. You know, hey, someone could play spoiler and knock one of them out. That is a good possibility with the way it's set up right now, but hey, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and we've already got a ready-made villain in Joey Logano. I mean, I love Logano because I love him because people hate him so much. And you know, as you can tell, I really like people who inspire strong emotions.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not as big a fan of it. If there are a few drivers out there that you're like, I can take him or leave him, but any driver that you either love or you hate, I'm all in on them. And Logano is one of those guys where he just, you know, he'll go and he'll just mess somebody up, and he'll be just like, hey man, I was just racing, you know.
Right.
Just what I was doing. He's getting, that little Logano smile that people just want to punch off of him. But more power to him, man. Good for you. Do it. Do everything you need to do. Go out and try to win that race. Go out and try to win the next race. Go out and try to win all the races. And so, yeah, and he's going to – obviously, he's got that feud with Truex, you know, simmering. So that's going to be
– And apparently Eric Almirola now too.
Yes,
so.
Yeah, Almirola's lurking out there. He and Harvick have had words before. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that I love about NASCAR is that there are 40 guys in the field, and every single one of those has some kind of story with the other 39. I mean, that's just I just love that all that kind of subtext and backstory. And yeah, if the big three and Logano get in, man, we're in for a hell of a Homestead race.
I am with you. All right, before you get out of here, I got to get this out. All right, give me your championship pick. Who wins at Homestead?
I feel that Kevin Harvick is on too much of a roll for anybody to stop now. He's looking a lot like he was in his championship season. And if everything is clicking for him, I mean, he is just tough to beat. I love Kyle Busch. I love seeing the way that he is able to just make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken crap. But Harvick is just in another class. When he is on, he is just in another class. So I will ride with a number four car, and we will see where it takes us.
I like that. Man, Jay, I had an absolute blast. This was so much fun.
I hope we do this
a couple times next year. Tell everyone where they can follow you at on social media.
Yeah, it's all Jay Busby, JayBusBee on Twitter and on Facebook, and then over at Yahoo as well.
Awesome. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, big thanks to Yahoo Sports writer Jay Busby for coming on the show. Jay, enjoy the last two races, and we will talk with you soon.
Sounds good, brother. Take care.
Take care. Well, Lap Traffic Nation, how about that? That was a lot of fun talking to Jay. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that as much fun as we had recording that. That was a blast. Passionate, man. That's what I love. You guys have heard me say that all along. That's what I love about this sport, being able to talk to passionate, knowledgeable people within this sport. That was so much fun. All right. Well, that said, as you can tell, this show is going to go long. We're at the 47-minute mark, just getting started. Got a whole nother interview coming up here with Cole Custer to break down the Xfinity part of this past weekend. So that said, I am going to switch things up a little bit here. Rather than give you guys the full breakdown of the Xfinity race like I normally do, or a synopsis, if you will, I'm going to talk about the Xfinity standings real quick, and then I'm going to drop in the interview with Cole Custer here just to kind of move things along a little bit. So right now, Xfinity standings, Cole Custer is the only driver guaranteed with his ticket to Homestead. We will have at least two drivers making it in on points due to John Hunter Nemechek's win back at Kansas. That said, right now it's Custer, Riddick, Sadler, Hemric, with Allgaier being the first out, followed by Tift, Bell, and Cindric. Bell, who was looking to rebound after that rough Kansas race, finished 32nd this week, basically putting himself in a must-win at ISM, 34 points out. Allgaier, not necessarily in a must win, but it's definitely going to need some help. He's 12 points out. Matt Tift in a similar spot, 14 points out. Custer was in a similar spot last year in the playoffs and missed his chance by 4 points. I'm going to talk to Cole about that here in a few minutes. But just to kind of put it into perspective, Cole Custer's going to Homestead. Cole Custer, with 80 laps to go in the race, was seventh in the standings, 25 points out, FYI. So, hey, anything can happen in ISM. And that'll all get sorted out Saturday when we find out who will join Cole Custer at Homestead. But right now, Lap Traffic Nation, what do you say we talk to Cole Custer about this past weekend at Texas? Joining me on the line, driver of the 00 Autodesk Ford with Stewart Haas Racing, making his fourth appearance on the Lap Traffic Podcast, fresh off his win this past Saturday at Texas, Mr. Cole Custer. Cole, welcome back to the show, man. How's it going?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Glad you're able to come on tonight. Appreciate the time. I really do. So let's talk about right off the bat this past weekend at Texas. So at the drop of the green flag, things got really crazy. Christopher Bell going around lap one. Another caution on lap 15 before things finally settled down. What was the start of the race like from your perspective?
And Texas is always a tough track because the line is so narrow that you kind of got to be careful at first because, you know, guys are going to be sucking you around being on your right side door, or it's just, you know, it's such tight racing, you know, you can just kind of get together with each other. So I kind of started the race out kind of conservative a little bit, and it looked like it kind of bit some guys and some other guys who were being a little bit aggressive, and you know, just kind of wait for the group to kind of work in, and it kind of worked out then.
Gotcha. You talk about turn one and two, the difference of racing turn one and two at Texas on a restart versus during the middle of a run when things are kind of settled in.
Well, it's tough because in a restart, you can carry some throttle through there. You can carry a lot of throttle. But, you know, when somebody's right on your door, it's tough to find the perfect balance of getting everything you can and not wrecking yourself. So it's extremely fine line. And when you're passing somebody in the middle of a run and you're racing with somebody, it's really tough to, I didn't feel like the whole race, you're just kind of being conservative, making sure you don't spin out under somebody, but it's definitely one of the things I feel like you struggle with every single time you go there though.
Yeah, no, it's funny, like, as a fan sitting on the couch watching that race, like, the entire race from start to finish, even when there was a long green flag run, like, stage two and into stage three, I was waiting for the bottom to fall out. I was almost waiting for a big one coming off turn two there with those guys. Did it feel like that, or did it ever feel calm at any point in that race?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty weird because once it seemed like, you know, two or three guys spun out on restarts under people in turns one and two, but they never really caused huge wrecks. It seemed like they all, you know, they just wash up to the top of the track and it kind of is what it is. But
sure.
I was always thinking every single time that there was going to be some huge pile up, but we got lucky and didn't have that happen. But every single time you're thinking the worst is going to happen.
Sure. I can only imagine. So stage two starts off pretty smooth. Like I said, ended up getting a late caution in stage two, which set up for a 5-lap shootout, which resulted in you picking up the stage win. You talk about that restart towards the end of stage two there a little bit.
Yeah, that was a tough restart. It's Tyler Reddick definitely he made it hard on me trying to win that stage. I mean, because I knew we needed the points and we needed the stage win. So
sure.
I was going to race really hard for it, and I think Tyler was too. So we ran side by side for like a lap and a half or two laps, and that whole time you're just risking kind of wrecking your car because you're racing so close and so hard on a narrow track. So it was definitely pretty hectic, and I'm just happy that we made it out of it, really.
Absolutely.
But that definitely set the tone for the rest of the day. I think that, you know, we can compete for the win.
Absolutely. Well, so let's talk about the win. Let's fast forward to the end of stage three. 13 to go. The 16 of Ryan Reed brings out the yellow. At that time, the leaders, Allgaier, John Hunter, Hemric, had to come down based on how they were lined up from a pit strategy, fuel perspective. They had to come down. That puts you back to P1. On the restart, RCR cars, Hemric and Lee bring out another yellow. Take us through that last start again with you and Riddick out there on the track and that backstretch, man. That was fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things about that restart was which lane Elliott Sadler was in, because he's the best guy on restarts that you want to have behind you because he'll push you better than anybody else.
So, sure.
It was very frustrating for me because I didn't have him behind me. So Tyler definitely always got the best jump. I feel like out of the restart zone and was able to take the lead through one and two. But I feel like, you know, I just had to kind of figure out a way to get by him. Because I knew we had to win because we were in a bad point situation in Kansas. So
sure.
I kind of had to find a way to get to his bumper and get him a little bit loose. And it just kind of worked out.
It's funny. You were on the inside on that last restart, right?
The last free start, I was on the outside.
Outside. Okay, yeah. So it's, you know, with you and Harvick, man, bouncing back and forth around there on those restarts, you know, sometimes you was there anything that was the difference maker in when you could or couldn't make it work on the inside on a restart?
Depending on your positioning into one, I mean, if you had a half a car on somebody or you had a nose on somebody going into one on the bottom, I feel like you were gonna be all right. But if you were kind of side by side, it was pretty tough to make it stick just because that guy could put it on your door so hard and spin you out.
Sure.
Pretty much. So it was a lot about your position going into turn one, but it's just a really tough track to really race at the first couple laps for sure.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about last year to this year real quick. Last year, finished the season with 7 top fives and a win at Homestead, missed racing for the championship by 4 points. This year, 2 races to go, basically doubled your top fives, 13 right now, before going into Saturday, basically needing a win to advance. What's the difference been with your team from last year to this year to be able to improve on the finishes like that and to be able to go out there and close it out when it really mattered?
I think the biggest thing is that it's just the second year for everybody. You know, it was the first year for Stuart Haas in the Xfinity Series last year, and it was a first year for me. So I think we were all kind of learning together last year, and I think, you know, it was tough because we didn't have a big notebook.
Sure.
But this year, I feel like we kind of know more what we want to do when we get to the racetrack, and I know, you know, what I want to do when I hit the track for the first time. So it's just a combination of things, and I think I've gotten better as a racer. So it's just you learn so much in a year, I feel like.
Yeah, no, totally. I get that. So last year, you roll into Homestead, nothing to lose. You pick up the win. Can you roll into Homestead with the same mentality, or do you have to approach it a little bit differently this year?
Oh, I feel like we can do it. We have the best, you know, setup to go off of, I feel like.
Sure,
you know, for
right?
Sure, from last year.
Right.
But things always change, you know. Like, I mean, the body rules are different. I think they're bringing a different tire back. You don't know if the track's going to be the same. So, you know, we're going to probably bring a really similar setup back, but we can't, you know, be comfortable going in there. We have to know that we got to do our homework and be ready to race because everybody's going to get better also. So it's I think we're ready and we're capable of winning the championship, though.
Absolutely. And this week, going into Phoenix, any different approach, or are you guys going out there and getting 2 in a row?
I think we're going out there to win for sure. I mean, we don't want to make any enemies going into Homestead, but
sure.
If we can win another race, that's what we want to do. So there's 2 races left, and we want to win both of them. And I think Phoenix has been a pretty decent drag for us in the past. We had decent speed there. Actually, I think really good speed there earlier in the year. We just didn't get the finish that we wanted, but I think there's no reason why we can't go there and compete for a win also.
Excellent. All right, Cole. Tell everyone where they can follow you at on social media and give a shout-out to your sponsors.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. It's all under Cole Custer, Cole Custer 00. So go on there and follow me, and can't thank everybody at Automation and Autodesk. And it was actually Autodesk. It was their first race on the car at Texas, so that was a pretty awesome
That's awesome.
Pretty awesome deal for them.
I bet they'll be back.
Yeah, I hope so. Hopefully, we get more in the future.
All right, Lap Traffic Nation, big thanks to the driver of the 00 Autodesk Ford with Stuart Haas Racing, Cole Custer, for coming on the show tonight. Cole, thank you so much for taking time out during what I know is a very busy and stressful time to come on and celebrate the win. You've been on a bunch. Your support to the show has been awesome and very much appreciated. Best of luck to you at Homestead, and hopefully we have a reason to chat here again soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you later. Oh, how cool was that, being able to talk to Cole Custer fresh off that win at Texas. So awesome of him to take some time to come on the show. Just love it. It's so awesome. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I am having so much fun with this show. All right, man, there's still the truck series. All right, guys, I'm going to try to push this along as much as I can here, but got to talk about the trucks. You can't skip the trucks. Justin Haley picks up the stage 1 win. Myatt Snider picks up the stage 2 win, and Justin Haley picks up the win. Sauter was looking to continue his dominance in the round of six after his win last week. Jumped up to an early lap one lead. Stuart Friesen takes the lead on lap two. And that's when it all went downhill for Johnny Sauter. But miraculously, he was able to finish with an 11th place finish after all of the damage, the cautions he was involved in. Just tremendous. Like, the ability for him to go out there and wheel that truck around, finish on the lead lap in 11th with the way his day was going is just crazy. You know, the truck race, which kicked us off Friday night, which is being talked about last here on the show tonight, you know, it kind of set the tone, for, at least for the trucks in the Xfinity Series. Lots of early cautions, man. These guys were getting so loose into turns one and two with the side drafting and with the repave and the configuration of the way one and two are. It is no wonder we had three cautions through 22 laps of this race. And like I said, that kind of set the tone for what we got in the Xfinity Series. Thinned out a little bit in a cup race there, but man, just a crazy truck race. That said, stage three of the truck race got our longest green flag of the night. I believe the entire stage, stage three, went caution-free with green flag pit stops and all. Justin Haley picking up the dominating win. He was up front all night. Finished at one stage one and was P3 stage two. Justin Haley punched their Justin Haley and Johnny Sauter punched their tickets to Homestead. Brett Moffitt, Noah Gregson currently in on points. Right now, if a new playoff driver, wins other than Moffitt or Gregson, Moffitt would be the guy in on points. Enfinger and Crafton on the outside looking in, 18 and 23 points behind fourth place Noah Gregson. I'd be shocked if both Enfinger and Crafton made it in, but hey, it's still possible one of them could go out, get the win, or a tragedy to Gregson or Moffitt this weekend at ISM could really shake things up. I don't foresee that happening, but it all gets sorted out Friday night. Again, Friday night trucks are finishing the season. Friday night lights. I love it. So this Friday night, ISM, and then next Friday, Homestead, not ISM, under the lights. Oh, can't wait. I can't believe the season's almost over. All right, it is time for some social media. Everyone, make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. A like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, at Lap Traffic PC. Don't forget about the big giveaway at 3,500 followers, giving away that 124 diecast signed by Richard Childress. Also going to have some giveaways tonight to help celebrate the lead up to episode 100. I'm giving away two t-shirts on Periscope. If you missed that, don't forget next week before episode 100 on Thursday, I might do some giveaways before the show, after the show, maybe both. Who knows? I don't know how much time we'll have. We'll just see. a little flashback to old school there. I don't know if we'll have enough time, but we will make time. Over to some new followers on Twitter, Blake at Blake Boyer 14, big Boyer fan, Briscoe and Crafton fan, Norm at Ace Norm 7368 for Chemung, New Jersey, loves camping, NASCAR, and beer. That is the trifecta, brother. I love it. Marcia at Beagle Mom X4 from Athens, Georgia. She's rocking the 88. Justin, average sports fan at Wrestling Fan underscore 68 from Iowa. Big fan of indie pro wrestling and dirt racing. Welcome to the show, guys. Make sure to tell your friends. If you want some stickers and a koozie, go fill out the contact page on the website, The Lab Traffic Podcast, and I will send one out to you. I'm skipping the silly season because there's not a lot of silly season, so no clown noise, nothing fun like that. We're going to go right into the weather segment with Mr. Aaron Studwell. All right, Lab Traffic Nation, this is the sixth attempt at this intro here. We're going to get it right this time. Joining me, as he does each and every week, this time from around the globe, you can follow him on Twitter, at RaceWeather. Make sure you check out the website, raceweather.net. Whew, I did it. Aaron, welcome.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
I'm good. Good.
Excellent.
I am in Budapest. As I get told, it is said here with the S being an SH sound.
Excellent. So what takes you all the way to Budapest? And props to the dedication to the show, by the way, for...
This is great. This is exactly why I'm doing it. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. We're doing this from around the world and we get the tech to work. Yeah. Well, our words, they don't always work.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Tech working.
Yes.
I am working at Utvalskalorand University. I'm working on my dissertation here. I took a week off of work. I am focusing on my research and focusing on my writing. And it's just a chance to get away and meet other people in the other departments.
That's fantastic. So when did you get in? What'd you do? Have you done anything fun? Or has it just been nose to the book pretty much?
I got in Saturday afternoon, absolutely exhausted. It felt like I really just went from Friday afternoon to Sunday, Saturday afternoon and into the weekend. I'm like, worried Friday night go.
Right.
Because we're flying east. Walked around, done some shopping, walked around campus the hard way yesterday because I got lost and went to the wrong building to start with.
Oops.
Yeah.
Oops.
Just walking around town. It's a beautiful city. Love it here. Great opportunity to come back and visit. And I may go to a hockey game, a soccer game, not a hockey game, a soccer game on Saturday.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Let's recap real quick here because I don't want to keep you too long over there. But Michigan, dominating win over Penn State. They're calling the revenge tour complete. What do you think? Will they crack the top four in the rankings that are going to come out here later tonight?
I do think they'll crack the top four, and I don't think the revenge tour is over and done yet.
No, we got one more, in my opinion.
We got one more date.
That's right, one more.
And I think they'll have to break through top four tonight. LSU had to fall.
I think so. I really agree with you there. What is the weather looking like this weekend? Michigan traveling to Rutgers.
78 to nothing. Wait a minute. Wrong prediction. Wrong prediction. Cold front early, rain early. So it could be a bit of a wet track, but it should be cleared up by kickoff. Winds west to west-northwest, almost 20 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
So that'll make
kicking a little difficult.
Yeah, and Patterson short passes or just hand the ball off, which is all I think we'll need to do this game. Yeah.
You know, I agree. Not to get over cocky, I don't think it's going to be that big of a struggle this weekend. But, hey, stranger things have happened. Hashtag Appalachian State, never forget. But, anyways, moving right along. How about this weekend? All three series are headed out to ISM. What do we got?
You know, as for as often as in the fall race, we could have a chance of rain showers. No chance of rain showers. So it looks actually pretty good this weekend.
Excellent.
Sunny skies, temperate temperatures. Just should be a good weekend for racing. Easy weekend for me.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, I'll be. I'm looking forward to that. All right. When do you come back?
I'm flying back. I have a 6:30 flight Sunday morning out of Budapest. That's Budapest time. That is 12:30 Detroit a.m. Detroit. I get back to Houston at 1:15 on Sunday.
Wow. That's so crazy.
It'll seemingly only be a 6-hour, 7-hour flight.
Okay.
But I'll be gaining 7 hours of time back by flying west.
Gotcha. Nice. That's crazy. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, big thanks to Mr. Aaron Studwell from chiming in across the globe. Sir, we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. I'll be back in the States. We'll have a better connection then,
absolutely,
too.
All right,
have
man.
A good one.
We'll talk to you. All right. If you don't appreciate the dedication of Aaron to call in halfway around the globe in Budapest, I don't know what to tell you. Just how awesome is that? Like, that he loves doing this that much that he scheduled time and lined up his time zone to be able to do that. Just awesome. Appreciate you, brother. Love it. All right. It is time for everybody's favorite segment of the week. It's time to get to your lucky dog and lapped down picks. You can call or tweet anytime after the checkered flag drops. You can tweet at Lap Traffic PC, or you can call and leave your picks on the Wave Around hotline, 248-965-9538, and I will play them back. So without further ado, let's get to my picks. I am giving Mr. Kevin Harvick the lucky dog of the race. How can you not? Team finally put one together after losing a few of them throughout the playoffs. Finally got it done. My lap down, sorry, I'm going outside of NASCAR because you guys got all of the good ones covered. So my lap down is going to the Lions offensive line giving up 10 sacks this weekend to the Minnesota Vikings. All right, that said, let's get to your tweeted responses. Tim at TTrip14's Lucky Dog, Kevin Harvick having the best car all day, and what he did at the end of the race for that little boy. Now, that's awesome. The lap down is NASCAR for making that huge mistake, making Jimmy start at the rear for no reason. Definitely need to work on the communication. Mick at GoDucks42 underscore Mick's Lucky Dog, Larson and Stenhouse had a dash for cash for the kids, and Harvick doing a post-race selfie and giving the checkered flag to that young man. Lap down, drivers whining about being raced hard. I'm with you there, sir. Brandon at Brandon K. Carl's Lucky Dog goes to Cole Custer for that last lap pass in the Xfinity Series on Saturday. Lap down goes to Almirola's post-race comments about Logano racing him hard. Blue bleeping who? There's been a lot of crybabies these last 2 weeks. Jesse at Iowa NASCAR Fans Lucky Dog. How about Justin Haley pulling out the big win when he was in the hole? He looked to have one of the fastest trucks all race and should be fast in Miami. Lap down is Kurt Busch. If not for Truex gutsy comeback, he'd be sitting in a good spot going into ISM. Love you guys giving some Lucky Dogs to the Xfinity and Truck Series there. That's awesome. Scott at 1985 Wagner's Lucky Dog. Martin Truex Jr. got down, made it back for a solid finish. Lap down, Boyer. Team luck as it has gone to the outhouse. Kenny at STL Cards Rule for Evs. Lucky Dog goes to the selfie boy. Harvick shows exactly what's right with the sport. Lap down goes to NASCAR officials. They continue to show what's wrong with the sport by moving the 48 to the rear by a mistake. Eddie at 3Wide underscore Fast Eddie's Lucky Dog. Stewart Haas Racing, the organization, will be going for two championships with Cole and Harvick. Lap down, NASCAR. Big two thumbs down for the communication call on the 48 team. Mike at Odell underscore Michaels. Lucky Dog, no cup drivers in the Xfinity race. The Xfinity drivers put on a good show despite track conditions. Lap down, obviously. NASCAR's call on the 48. Good thing he wasn't in the hunt at Homestead. John at D Nader's Lucky Dog. Custer, he's in the championship four. Lap down, Trevor Bayne's cup career. Ouch. Burn right there. All right, let's get to the Wave Around Hotline and your calls.
Like Gray Wolfpack 5 on Twitter. Texas. Well, being a Harvick fan, you know, yay, Texas, that was a great race. If I hadn't been a Harvick fan, I'm not so sure that I would have thought much of that race. Wasn't real impressed with a mile and a half track that only has one groove of racing. You know, anybody that tried to get out of the groove into the second groove seemed like, you know, they would crash. So, the only real excitement to me in the race was the restarts, and there was plenty of that. And in fact, at the end of the race, there was more excitement than I really wanted. I just kept waiting to see what is going to happen that was going to cause Harvick to lose that race. But, in the end, it turned out pretty good, but yeah, you know, maybe as the track wears in the new repavement and stuff, maybe it'll get better, but it wasn't all that fantastic to me. Lucky Dog, the number 14, Kevin Harvick, on his way to Miami. It was a really great race, very dominant. That race with him and Blaney at the end with those restarts and stuff, that was great. That was truly great. And when Larson bumped Blaney really hard there on that last restart and pushed him out there, I thought, oh, here we go. But, you know, Harvick just powered around him and away he went. So that was great. And the little thing that Harvick did with that fan, you know, taking him in there and doing the selfie and stuff, how cool was that? See a lot of stuff on social media, people they're saying, I'm not really a Harvick fan, but that was really cool. Kudos to him. So he scored a lot of points with a lot of people with that little thing. It was good for his team. It was good for his owner. It was good for the sport. So really cool for him. And that's my lucky dog. Lap down. I'm sorry, Eric. I love Eric Almirola. Okay. I really think that he's done great this year, and I really like him as a person as far as what you see, you know, through the television and so forth. But man, did he whine like a little girl over Joey Logano racing him hard there at the end. I'm sorry. Joey's not on his team. He's not going to roll over and move just because he's locked into Homestead. You're a competitor. And, you know, did you miss last week's race when Joey said, hey, I race hard. That's how I do it. And, you know, you think he was going to do anything different? Man, quit whining. And I realize, you know, I mean, Harvick will whine sometimes too, but for some reason, that really just got on my nerves because I didn't see anything that Joey did that was all that bad. He just did what he was supposed to do. And so my lap down, Eric Almirola. All righty, on to Phoenix. See what's going to happen. See who's going to make it into my one to say on to Phoenix. And then see who is going to be the final four. It's going to be a great race in Miami, and I can't wait for it. Looking forward to it. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling in. Appreciate the calls. Always do. Yeah, a lot of good points you hit there. You know, a lot of people aren't Harvick fans, but it's hard to hate when you do something that cool with a little kid on a racetrack. You know, that's all that was talked about post-race. That's all that's been on social media. Definitely great publicity for Harvick. Gave a fan a really cool experience, and that's what's great about the sport. As far as your lap down goes, you know, that was a lot of people's lap down, and I don't disagree with it at all. You know, I don't take anything away from what Almirola has done this year because he's done a lot. And I just think, I don't even think necessarily he was whining. I just think he's bummed that much because of the fact that, you know, he's behind on points. But you're right. You know, Logano's just not going to roll over. The only affiliation is Ford at that point in time. And that's not enough just to give someone the spot. I don't think it was going to make or break that big of a points deal there. It's not like he would have been on the outs, you're sitting above the cut line with those few extra spots there. I don't believe. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. But yeah, you know, hey, that's the product of what this format has created there, and you know, so it's got its pros and it's got its cons. That's for sure. So, all right, thanks, Jeff, for calling. Let's get on to caller number two.
Hey, Brandon, it's Kathleen at KHI Fan. I only saw the truck race at Texas in the Cup race. I didn't get to watch the Xfinity, so I can only comment on those two races. My lap down pick has to go to Todd Gilliland, and being seconds away from his first series win and then having that just go poof, and you know, it was just heartbreaking. I can't even imagine. And though I must say he handled that post-race interview like a champ, you could tell he was just ready to, like, break down over it, and who can blame him? But he really did a good job with that. So hopefully, you know, his next opportunity isn't too far away, and I'm pretty sure it isn't. There were some runners-up for me for that lap down trophy this week. I'm going to have to say NASCAR was in the close running after the big, you know, mistake they made for Jimmy Johnson. That was just horrible. And while it could have been like way worse if he was in the chase, I don't know what they would have done. That was just horrendous that they could make a mistake like that. My other runner-up was Eric Almirola and the comments he made about Joey already being in the chase and, you know, racing him too hard or not letting him go or, you know, whatever exactly he said. I was just very disappointed that that came from him. I know it came out of frustration, but still, like, to go to that whiny response was just very disappointing from him. I'm going to have to go with my lucky dog to Kevin Harvick and that four team for a foo-free race. If we ever needed to pull one out, this was the perfect time. It was just awesome to see. We just need to eke out one more, and hopefully it's at Homestead. So we shall see. Anywho, talk to you later. Bye.
Kathleen, thanks for calling in. I agree. Todd Gilliland, man, he's been so close so many times this year. He feels like the bridesmaid in the truck series. You know, finished fourth. He's had a ton of good top fives, just hasn't been able to close it out there. Like you said, Almirola, I don't know what to make of that, to be honest. I really just think that, you know, it's just disappointment on his end and just letting out frustration. And it probably just didn't come out the way that he wanted it to. At least that's what I'm hoping, because, you know, he's had a great year. And, you know, it was uncharacteristic of him to do that, you know. So we shall see what happens the rest of these next few races here. All right. It is time for caller number three. And you know who it is, Mr. Andrew Kantzian.
Brandon, what's up, man? Only in NASCAR can we go from one of the best races of the year to probably one of the worst. Now, I'll be honest, I watched the whole 25 laps of the race, the last 25 laps, and they were somewhat exciting, but from what I read, that was a snoozer, which doesn't surprise me because Texas sucks, and Eddie Gossage is really nothing but a mouthpiece who likes to talk about how well he promotes races, and he turns out a pretty bad crowd, so I don't know how great of a promoter he is, but I'm just thinking out loud, what do I know? I think Chase Elliott summed it up best. They really ruined that racetrack with the way they repaved it and then ruined turn one. And then Graham Rahal said the same thing on the IndyCar side. So, you know, it's not just us whiny NASCAR fans and drivers and industry folks complaining about how bad that race was. So I'm going to put the whole race a lap down because it sucked. Ryan Blaney's the lucky dog because he really kicked ass for me in fantasy after Stuart Friesen and Christopher Bell, they just shot blanks for me. And I'm like, guys, really? Like, we got to step it up here. So maybe I'll give him a pep talk next week for Phoenix. So we'll see how that one goes. Another lap down. I put myself a lap down because I took counterfeit money at work. That wasn't smart. I still have a job, so that's good. And the other lucky dog is, let's just say, Bob Ross likes to have some damn good beers at parties. At Halloween week, Halloween should always fall on a Wednesday, so we can get drunk the weekend before and the weekend after, because this Halloween weekend was pretty awesome in that regard. Thanks, man. I'll talk to you later.
Mr. Andrew Kantzian, love it. You definitely got to give some pep talks to your fantasy drivers, if you need to, and it sounds like you need to. But yeah, Blaney was there at the beginning and at the end, which is definitely a step in the right direction for that team. I definitely think they're going to be one to get some wins next year. And as far as your lap down picks go, Texas, the repave, all I'll say is, hey, hopefully eventually it comes in. We got one Groover Racing. Turns one and two were a disaster for the truck in the Xfinity race and the Cup race. But the Cup guys held their composure a little bit better going through one and two. Not as many issues as we saw in truck and Xfinity. Hey, it is what it is. All right, everyone, thank you for calling the Wave Around Hotline. Make sure you get your picks in, whether you tweet them after the race or you call the Wave Around Hotline, 248-965-9538. Send me your lucky dog lap down picks, and I will play and read them back on the show. All right, moving right along, it is time to recap some fantasy from this past weekend. Don't forget about the survey link on the website, under the fantasy page on the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. It's open to anyone looking for feedback for the league next year. Whether you played, you want to play, you know how it's been ran, go give me your feedback. Greatly appreciate it so I can know how you guys want to play in the league next year. Segment three, two races to go. No one had Justin Haley in the truck race this past weekend. Aaron Studwell and Paul Hollenbeck, the only two players to pick Cole Custer. And there were 17 players who took Harvick in the Cup race. That said, week high was 164 points by Paul Hollenbeck with his picks of Harvick, Custer, and Moffitt. And second week high goes to Matt Fossum with 150 with his picks of Harvick, Allgaier, and Moffitt. After 2 weeks of pain, it gives me great joy to announce that the MOATF podcast is no longer in the lead and has fallen and falling fast. And we have a new leader in segment three. Mr. Paul Hollenbeck is in first with 713 points. David James is in second with 681. Kayla Jordan in third with 670. Matt Fossum in fourth with 668. Got a two-way tie for fifth with Jeff Legg and Kathleen McDonald with 664. Mr. Andrew Kantzian is in sixth with 655. Jeff Hess is in seventh with 638. Ryan Keffer is in eighth with 635. And the MOATF podcast has fallen from first to ninth with 632. And John Elliott wraps out the top 10 with 628. So with two races to go, there's been big swings in the standings all segment long. So it is still open. It is anyone's game. Over to the cumulative standings, Chloe Yunker is in first with 33.72, Tommy Witt in second with 33.53, David James in third with 3,336, John Entwistle in fourth with 33.05, and Jeff Legg wraps out the top five with 32.83. As pointed out by good fan and follower of the show, Mr. Andrew Kantzian, stage points are not awarded to the final four at Homestead. That said, if you do elect to choose a playoff driver at Homestead, Mick or I will do a manual adjustment for those. For example, last year, Martin Truex Jr. won the race and only got 40 points. But he finished fifth and second in the stages, which would have given him an additional 14 points for a total of 54. So that is what we will do. We'll do a manual calc for the four playoff guys if you choose to pick those. I think that will be the most fair so that it's not at a disadvantage for you to pick one of the final four there. So that's how we'll do that and make sure to get that out in email communication to you as well. That said, my picks for Martinsville Trucks, Johnny Sauter finished 11th, Christopher Bell not so good there, 32nd, and Martin Truex Jr. finished 9th. All right, it is time for the picks this week. Don't forget, we're picking for all three series for the remainder of the season. We head to Kevin Harvick's playground this weekend at ISM, where he has won 7 of the last 12 races, his most recent coming in the spring earlier this year, and at one point won 4 races in a row from November 2013 through March 2015. Does he make it 2 in a row to head into Homestead? Kyle Busch, 1 win at ISM way back in 2005, and Martin Truex Jr. is winless at ISM. Kyle, Chase, and Martin Truex each had a top 5 here in spring. And oh, by the way, last year at this race, Chase Elliott finished 2nd to Matt Kenseth. What 2 other drivers will join Harvick and Logano? We will find out Sunday. But first, it's time for my picks. Over to the Truck Series. Sauter won this race last year. I've got no reason to think he can't do it again. Give me the 21. In the Truck Series. Over to the Xfinity race. Allgaier and Bell, top 2 in the Xfinity Series all season long, are on the outside looking in. I will take the 7 of Justin Allgaier. And over to the Cup Series. Because I'm a Stuart Haas guy, give me the 14 of Clint Bowyer to take the checkered flag at ISM. Those are my picks. I can't wait to see who you guys take. Oh, it's almost over. I can't believe it. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, that is going to do it for episode 98 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, at Lap Traffic PC. Subscribe, download iTunes, Podbean, or your favorite podcasting hosting site. Don't forget about the contest each week leading up to episode 100. Huge thanks to Jay Busby from Yahoo Sports and Cole Custer for coming on the show. Next Tuesday, episode 99, a best of show. But next Thursday, the big bonus show, episode 100, is going to be big. Don't get caught chasing the lucky dog. Make sure you tune in each and every week to the Lap Traffic Podcast. I'm out of here. See ya.